It's 12:06. Pomp and Joe Show continues here. Want to remind you about Fan Twitter. It's brought to you by Southwest Kia and Peters Township. Visit them at southwestkia.net. And, of course, the Fan Text Line is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless they get money for you. 412-928-9370. We've been talking about the Steelers and their opening up of training camp, which technically will begin on Thursday. They all arrive there tomorrow. There'll be a run test. A lot of interesting stuff going on and a lot of interesting storylines. I want to remind you that all the three preseason games we'll have for you on KDK TV, beginning with August 9th in Jacksonville against a struggling team that I don't know what to expect from Jacksonville. And then after that, it's Tampa at home and then Carolina on the road. Right now, we bring in a man who covers this team, does a great job doing so. That would be Brian Batko of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Hello, Mr. Batko. How are you today?
Doing great, Bob. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Yeah. And so where are you right now? Are you up there or are you going up tomorrow?
No, I'm going to go up tomorrow morning. Campus opens for us around 9 and players should start rolling in around 10 a.m. Who you got? Who's going to be number one on the scene at Rooney Hall, you think?
That's always a good question to ask. But you know what? We've seen a tempered approach over the last several years. It used to be Antonio Brown with everything else he would bring, whether it's a chauffeur, coming in with a helicopter. James Harrison always was interesting in his. I don't know if I'm going to look at this. I don't know what, like, I don't know Jalen Ramsey. I don't know if he has these things that he does. Would he be someone you would expect to show up first and do it in a dramatic style? Or do you just think it's going to be offensive linemen show up? They don't even care if you're watching, right?
It's going to be Ben Skoranek that shows up first, and he's going to be wearing just a plain T-shirt because Ben Skoranek, you win with guys like Ben Skoranek, according to Kabali.
Who do you
think? I was going to say Zach Frazier or Mason McCormick. Yeah, just rolling up very quietly in the truck and bringing in their mattresses or whatever. As far as whether there will be a notable entrance, yeah, there really hasn't been one in recent years. One of the last ones that I can remember, didn't Eli Rogers come in on like a fire truck or
something?
Yeah,
on a fire truck.
He didn't even make the team that year. So
yeah, you have to have some status in the league before you pull stuff like that, I think.
Well, he did, but he just overestimated, I guess, his status with that particular team. So maybe that was a bad sign, and no one was like, "All right, we saw what happened there. We're not gonna risk making that same mistake." Landon Roberts was in like a cowboy getup last year. That was pretty funny. He had a mustache and a cowboy hat and stirrups or whatever. Vince Williams, I remember him in the Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Stone Cold, yeah, that was a good one.
But yeah, no one's really replicated the Steelers report day splashes of yesteryear, like AB and the Rolls Royce, and the helicopter was the big one. Brett Kiesel, didn't he show up in a big rig one year? James Harrison in a clown car. I think a lot of that too, Bob, is probably earned by team success. And when you're in a little bit of a cycle of slightly above mediocrity, then maybe it's not quite as cute to pull some of those stunts.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did AB, when he went to out west, did he arrive once in a hot air balloon? Was that part of his history with
he
arrivals?
May have.
I can't remember what it was.
I lost track of him other than the frozen foot.
Yeah, the frozen foot was interesting. I still laugh about that. 412, by the way, where is he? Do you know where he is? Have we found AB?
AB, no.
He was in Dubai, wasn't he
might
somewhere?
Still be in Dubai. Brian, do you think that Aaron Rodgers might pass out ayahuasca at everyone? Is that something that could happen at the beginning of camp?
I was just thinking about that limits of how much of a cluster it's going to be if he actually does stop and chat with the media on the way into Rooney Hall. I kind of have a feeling he won't. I don't think Russell Wilson did last year. I don't think we heard from him until that first practice. So, or maybe he did. I'd have to go back and look. But obviously, Aaron Rodgers wants to do things somewhat differently on report day because he does not want to get a pretty good rough calf strain pushing the weight sled there during the conditioning test around 4 o'clock.
No, especially since he's already gone through that year two of this. So let's talk about him since you brought him up first. We went through, Austin and I, the list of these 40-year-olds who've played, and not all that much success. If you take Brady out of the occasion, you're dealing with maybe Warren Moon. Vinny Testaverde did it for a little bit. I don't know how old Drew Brees was when he was, his final couple of years. But what kind of success do you think Aaron Rodgers could have knowing he's going to be 42 in season?
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly has to give you pause. And, you know, I think that gave a lot of teams around the league pause, or else he would have been a more sought after free agent this offseason. You know, clearly the Jets decided they wanted to go in a different, younger direction. I mean, I think it is less of a concern for quarterback, don't get me wrong, than corner or really any other position. But it's more of a concern than if you were a kicker or a punter or a long snapper. You still need to be able to move around, climb the pocket. I mean, I think that's the big question I have with him is he going to have that first step, that initial burst to, you know, climb the pocket, evade a little bit of pressure if teams bring that? And you know he's going to know where to look, but is he going to be able to step up and buy himself some time and drift the way that he used to do? And, you know, even at the height of his powers, I mean, he wasn't necessarily running past people, but I mean, he was always good extending plays and scrambling and keeping his eyes downfield. I still think he's going to need to be able to marry the physical part of playing the position with obviously the cerebral aspect of it, which he should be better at than any quarterback in the league at this point.
How do you think the relationship will be between he and Arthur Smith, knowing that you're dealing with a four-time NFL MVP who's had success, and a lot of times that success came from his way of doing things? Do you think there's a pretty good give and take from what you can tell so far on this, and how much of his ideas will be incorporated into their offensive play game plan?
I think there will be. I think there will be a lot of mutual respect there as well. You know, there are some connections between the two, even though they've never worked together. I mean, Matt LaFleur from Green Bay was Arthur Smith's offensive coordinator in Tennessee, and then he succeeded him and then went on to great heights, of course, with the Titans. A lot of, yeah, just mutual connections there. And I think it's interesting. I mean, they both know what they're signing up for in getting into this, but you know, I wonder too, this is still a big year for Arthur Smith. I mean, I think he's going to have some leeway, but if he wants to get back to being a head coach, then you can't just kind of throw away this year and chalk it up to, okay, we had an over the hill quarterback. I mean, you need to show something with this opportunity with the Steelers to get back to those, you know, those places that he wants to be that didn't go well in Atlanta for him. So yeah, it's kind of fascinating to watch how that rapport plays out, but I don't think that's going to be too much of a concern. I think Rodgers and Smith will get along well. They kind of remind me of each other just when it comes to their personality, dry humor, and a little self-deprecating. So I think those two will see eye to eye on a lot.
Do you think that just because of his age and everything, he's going to be limited? Like, will Rodgers get the benefit of like a vet's day off, like Watt will get or Cam will get during camp? And do you think that's something that they should have? Or should they just continue to build up chemistry and give him as many reps as possible?
Yeah, I don't know. And then you spin that forward to preseason. How much will he play in preseason? I don't know.
How much do you think he should play in preseason? Because we had this debate the other day, talking to some of the guys, you know, with Charlie and Chris and different. That's always a tough topic, isn't it, Brian? When you have a veteran quarterback, he doesn't need to show anything except this is a new system. So would you suspect that he will play a little bit at least?
Yeah, and I think with him not being here for OTAs, which is always, you know, a nice bonus, and it gets you a head start on working out the details and the chemistry and the relationships with your receivers and everybody else on offense. Yeah, I mean, I think every rep is valuable for him at this point. And, you know, preseason, you can't really simulate game-like situations other than that. I mean, football – what does Mike Tomlin always say? Practice is football-like, but it's not football. So I think the intensity always does ratchet up, even when you're in a meaningless game where the final score doesn't matter. Seeing guys in different jerseys where you aren't protected by the training camp setting, that can be good and bad. It can speed up things for you and allow you to get off on the right foot come week one where every play matters. Or, yeah, you can put yourself in harm's way. So I'm sure that's the kind of stuff that we'll be trying to suss out the rest of this month and certainly into August as we get closer to those exhibitions.
Brian Batko, our special guest here on the Pomp and Joe Show. Aside from quarterback, what is your biggest storyline heading into this one?
Man, I think there's so many. I mean, the biggest question that I still have is what this Jalen Ramsey addition is going to entail, because it has a lot of, there's a lot of people in that orbit because where he plays has an impact and a trickle down on Joey Porter Jr. and Darius Slay and the safety spot with Juan Thornhill and then Beanie Bishop at slot corner. So I just think figuring out what their plans are for him, and I assume they do have big plans for him. Otherwise, you're not going to swap out a, you know, pillar member of the franchise like Minkah Fitzpatrick to make that move. So that's probably the other big one. I mean, we also haven't heard from Jalen Ramsey. He's kind of gone quiet, gone underground. We heard from Aaron Rodgers, you know, that first day of mandatory minicamp once he got here. So, yeah, you know, all the veteran acquisitions from the outside to me are overshadowing the rookies and the draft picks a little bit this year, which maybe the Steelers like that for Derek Harmon and Caleb Johnson. They can kind of come in and work not in anonymity or obscurity, but, you know, they're a bigger fish to fry, I suppose, for the outside world with the Steelers.
Last year, Dante Jackson was brought in to figure out one of the issues at corner. I don't necessarily think he did. But what do you think would constitute a successful season for Darius Slay this year?
Well, I think, I mean, helping this team get over the hump is really what he was brought here to do. I mean, he got his Super Bowl ring over the weekend, I think it was, with all those Eagles reuniting for their ceremony. So he checked off that box on his resume. You know, if he's got one season left in those 34-year-old legs at corner, then yeah, helping the Steelers, you know, have a little bit more franchise success than they have is probably what it's all about for him. I don't think he's someone who really has a Hall of Fame case, but, you know, he's the Hall of Very Good. He's got a lot of nice individual accolades on his resume. Here's some sort of Steelers trivia for you guys on the doorstep of training camp. Did you know there are 10 Super Bowl champions on this team as they report to St. Vincent tomorrow?
Bob, can you name them?
Well, I'll say Slay.
Let's see how we do.
Since you said Slay, I'll say Ramsey.
Slay, yep. Ramsey, Rodgers.
Rodgers.
Kenneth Gainwell might be the hard one.
Well, no, because he just got the ring too.
Yeah, so he's on there.
Yeah, that's
so
he's five. On there.
Six. You said 10?
Yeah.
Wow, there are 10. Well, think about it.
Someone limits slandered at the outset of this segment.
Ooh, I slandered.
Slandered. Who did he slander? Let me think.
I don't know about slander. Slander might be a little strong, but he diminished his usefulness.
Robert Woods has one on the Rams, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, he does.
He has one. Scotty Miller has one with the Buccaneers.
In fact,
he caught a big pass in that Super Bowl, didn't he? Or
yep.
In the NFC Championship game. I can't remember which.
I can't even remember who I slandered. Was it Juan Thornhill?
Well, he has one, but I don't think you said anything.
No, I slandered him.
He got one.
Said anything patronizing about him.
Thornhill got one with Kansas City, correct?
Kansas City.
Yeah. So where are we? 7-8?
I think you guys have three left.
Three left.
Yeah, three
Jeez.
Left.
Patrick Queen? No.
Not Patrick Queen.
Patrick Queen.
Did Skylar Thompson get one as a backup somewhere?
No.
No, he was with Miami.
Are we including Will Howard's national championship ring?
No.
No, we are not. This is
that would be a trick question.
That would be a trick question.
Oh, man.
Hmm.
Now we're getting down
to... Would you like to go to the hint well?
Yes. Who did I slander? Okay. What position group? I can't even remember.
Same as Robert Woods. Won it with the same team, same year.
Oh, Brandon Johnson? No, he's on that roster. No, Lance McCutcheon.
What?
Nope.
Lance McCutcheon was—he's on their roster. You know, that.
Lance McCutcheon is on their roster.
He's a wide receiver. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
Not to be confused with Andrew.
Not no, please.
Oh my goodness.
He's a blocking wide receiver, Limits. He was on the team last year.
Skoronic.
Ben Skoronic, yes.
I didn't think I slandered Skoronic.
San Francisco 49ers.
I
yeah,
like you Ben Skoronic.
You patronized him. You definitely patronized him.
Yeah, well, because Kabali made a joke with us once that you can't win without a guy like Scotty Miller on your – or without a guy like Ben Skoronic on your team that does, like, all the little things well.
All right, that leaves us with what, then? One more?
Two. I think you guys have two left. I'll give you another hint.
Dylan Cook.
He's another former Eagle who won it, but not with this most recent
Isaac Seumalo.
Yep. Yeah,
that's right.
Yep. Now, who's the last one?
Number 10 is going to be tough because not only is it a long ago Super Bowl, but he's someone you even forget is on this roster.
Remember when Chris Oladokun left the Steelers and won two Super Bowls,
how about
Bob?
That? Chosen ahead of Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Geez, now you're going through.
He might be better than Brock Purdy. We've never seen Oladokun get a shot.
I give up.
This guy's in the running back room with Kenneth Gainwell. There's two rings in there.
Cordarrelle?
Patterson?
Cordarrelle Patterson. Ding, ding, ding.
Wait, when did Cordarrelle win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, he was with them in Atlanta when
Patriots.
He was with the Patriots.
Yeah, you're right. He was with the Patriots and won one.
That's a good trivia question, and there's no question.
You guys want to do another round of this because there's also 10 Pro Bowlers on this team.
Please.
Some of whom overlap.
All right. DK Metcalf.
Yes.
Aaron Rodgers. Ramsey.
I would say Patterson probably.
Darius Slay.
And his, you know, he's, you mean like people who are current Pro Bowlers?
No, just have been at any time.
Right. Patterson has to be on that list, right?
Yep.
TJ Watt.
Hayward,
Cam.
TJ Watt, Patrick Queen.
Patrick Queen.
Darius Slay. Who else? Jalen Ramsey. Well, I don't know what that brings us to.
That brings us to 8.
You guys are running through it, though. This is impressive.
I'm trying to think.
Alex Highsmith made a Pro Bowl.
Chris Boswell. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, good pick, Bob. Boswell. Hasn't Highsmith made one, right?
No.
Christian Kuntz. I'm stretching. I like Christian a lot.
Not that I know of.
Did Cam Johnson, the punter, make the Pro Bowl?
Not that I know of. If he did, then my list is also bunk.
Miles Killebrew has to be it.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? I forgot about Killebrew. So they're actually more than 10.
Oh.
Nice job.
Oh.
Okay. So there's one more that we're missing.
Did you say? This was a weird one last year. He was an alternate.
Russell Wilson went to the Pro Bowl last year.
Yeah, but he's not on the roster this year, though.
Yeah, I know. That's still
he was an alternate.
Flabbergasting that he made it.
He's with the Steelers and was an alternate?
Zach Frazier?
No, but he also he was part of the last trivia answer as well as a Super Bowl winner.
Oh. Fascinating. Any idea, Bob?
I don't think you mentioned him.
He was a Super Bowl winner. We didn't mention him.
No, I don't think you mentioned him as a Pro Bowler. He plays next to Zach Frazier.
Sam Mallow made it as an alternate.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Oh, and you know what? I think you guys named 11, and I think I actually missed one. So my own accounting is delayed. I forgot Jonnu Smith did make it last year.
Yes, he did.
With the Dolphins. Yeah, so that gives us a tidy dozen.
How about that? A lot of experience, which also means a lot of age. How concerned are you about the age?
That's the flip side of it, for sure.
What does that mean for you? Because I think a lot of these guys are going to face, you know, 17 games a long time.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I think it does make sense as you're trying to make this. It's going to be a one-year run with Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
We know that. I mean, he basically said that. So it does, if you can add these guys without really costing yourself much in the future, which Jalen Ramsey, Jonnu Smith, they did that. I mean, they did add guys that aren't going to break the bank for future draft picks. Now, if Minka Fitzpatrick goes on to have a resurgence as a veteran safety well into his 30s, then it's not going to look like a great move. But clearly the Steelers don't envision that happening. Darius Slay didn't hurt them in the compensatory draft pick formula because he was released by the Eagles. So I get it. I can understand what they're going for, even if it does lead to inevitably a lot of jokes about how a lot of players on this roster who are going to be wearing the throwbacks were actually alive for the 1933 team.
Well, I will say this. I give them credit because I think a lot of people thought coming into this season before all these moves were made, Brian, that this was going to be a throwaway kind of season. They don't operate like that, and I've known that for a long time. They every year is a different year, and they have done something completely out of character without compromising next year. So next year still will be the key in terms of the most important position out there. But this year it should be fun. What are you expecting in terms of the
division?
Yeah,
they're not putting all their eggs in one basket for this season, but no one really does in the NFL except for, I guess, the Rams did that for a year or two. Right. I mean, most of the smart teams are, you know, they're knowing when to push more chips into the middle, but they're always trying to keep sustained success. And that makes a lot of sense, too, in a parity-driven league where your fortunes can turn around quickly. Look at the Commanders with Jaden Daniels. I think the only aspect that hurts that argument or mindset for the Steelers is there are just so many young, high-powered quarterbacks on this side of the NFL. Even the Commanders' outlook would be a little bit more bleak if they were in the AFC versus the NFC, where, yeah, you get your guy under center, and all of a sudden you can kind of rock it up the standings.
Yeah. What is your outlook on the division itself? I still think the Ravens are the team to beat. I can make a case that they can actually this year maybe even be the Super Bowl winning team. They have a lot of guys on that team who've been there for a long time, and I think it may be time for them to win it. Do you think that optimistically if you're a Baltimore fan or not?
I do think that optimistically about the Ravens. I mean, I think you said that well. I like the vibes out of Baltimore. It seems like they're kind of shoring up some of the trouble spots that they've had. And, you know, every roster is going to have weaknesses in a salary cap league. So you can't have a defined answer at every position across the board. But, man, going out and getting Jaire Alexander for next to nothing at corner, getting DeAndre Hopkins, granted in the twilight of his career, but maybe a receiver who can still specialize in some of those combat catches or, you know, bring one down in the end zone. They are putting the finishing touches to the roster around Lamar Jackson. And, you know, I've been saying for a long time now that I think Lamar is too good that the ultimate prize will elude him for his entire career. But like I said, I've been saying that for years now. So there's a lot of great ones who never did get all the way there. So, and the Bengals, they're kind of the opposite. The vibes are terrible.
Terrible.
In Cincinnati with all the contract talk and Trey Hendrickson and Shamar Stewart. They've got the talent, all the talent amassed on offense. If they could just get one stop every once in a while on defense, they'll be a force to be reckoned with. But they can't even get players under contract on their defense, let alone out there making plays for them.
Yeah, that's true. That's been there. And they may have the same thing this year, 40 to 39 games all over again. And, of course, we talk about 40-year-old quarterbacks. How about if Joe Flacco ends up? He's 40, I believe, as the starter for Cleveland. He could very well be that guy, although I would be somewhat surprised if they did that. Were you?
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to turn out. I mean, I guess there's going to be a morbid curiosity kind of surrounding Cleveland Browns training camp this year in Berea, Ohio. What did you guys think of the throwback jerseys, the alternates unveiled yesterday?
I liked them.
I thought they were unique.
I liked
thought
the
they
helmet.
Were cool. The helmet's cool.
Yeah, I like the helmet.
A lot of people wanted the Batman.
Yeah, I like
jersey.
The helmet a lot. I like the top. The pants are weird to me. I think that I know a lot of people have said this on social media and maybe calling in. I think they would have looked better with black pants.
Black pants. I totally agree.
Don't really understand that beige.
It complements more. If you're in the fashion industry, they will tell you black pants will complement that than that look, whatever that is. So I agree with you there. But I like the top part of it for sure. And that's going to be on display with Green Bay game, right?
I am wondering, what are the Packers going to wear for that game? Otherwise, there's going to be a...
They had some dreadful ones last
year.
A
deluge of yellow at Acrisure Stadium that night.
Do you remember their last ones they had? I didn't like them at all. I don't know if it was a throwback or whatever it was.
It was a big throwback.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. Some of those are good.
There's like no lettering on them. I mean, they're like the original football jerseys ever made, so... But, yeah, maybe they should wear those. They'll at least be dark and in contrast, or maybe all white. I don't know. All white might look weird against the yellow and gold get-ups that the Steelers are going to be wearing on Sunday Night Football. That we'll see what the Green Bay Packers come up with that one. But it's going to be a funky uniform matchup no matter what.
Ryan, we thank you very much for your time. Look forward to seeing you at St. Vincent College and in the future number one Cochran Sports Showdown shows that we have. Thanks. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. See you, fellas.
All right. That's Brian Batko of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He'll be up there, and this will be this pilgrimage that we make every year to St. Vincent College in Latrobe as the Steelers get ready to put this training camp together and see what happens with some. It is intriguing. You have to admit, Austin, this whole season is going to be one that I think most observers of National Football League in general will focus on the Steelers, given all that they've done.
I imagine that tomorrow the amount of national media members is going to be significant. Like, everyone's going to have a big-time guy there. And I'm sure, I mean, the McAfee show is going there next week on Wednesday. So it's probably going to be national guys and gals alike that are going to report to this constantly to check in on Rodgers, Ramsey. Just a ton to focus on.
The Rodgers thing will just be nonstop all season long, every game in and game out. We are back, Bob Pompiani, with Austin Bechtold, as Joe Starkey is enjoying the week off. 412-928-9370. He's probably playing golf, but I just got back from a golf trip, and it was a very interesting one.
As far as I know, he was spending a couple days in Buffalo as well.
Oh. Are there good courses up there to play in Buffalo?
Possibly, and to visit his family. Yeah. How was your golf trip, Bob?
It was awesome, and I would encourage anyone. I know it's a little bit pricey to do this, but I've waited until now, and it's one of those bucket list thing items that as you get older, you want to kind of check off. And going to Scotland, which is the home of golf at St. Andrews and all the other courses, including Carnoustie, it's worth doing, you know, because at the end of the day, all you got left are memories and things you want to do with your family and friends. So if you get a chance, you should do it.
No doubt.
And they have such a different kind of lifestyle over there. You know, it's laid back. I mean, their day starts later, ends early. They make time for, you know, a little happy hour. It just, it's a whole different kind of outlook as opposed to the hustle bustle that we have in this country, it seems.
When do the days start, basically, for them then?
Well, I know when the day ends. The sun doesn't, you know, go down in the summertime until 10:30 at night.
Really?
So they take tea times all the way till 6:30 at night. You can get on, that's your first, the last tea time. So if you want to play at 6:30, it stays light until 10:30, unless you play in 6 hours, and then you'll never get done.
When does the sun rise?
Early, like 4 o'clock in the morning. In fact, I found that out the hard way because in the hotel room, you know how you leave a crack open and you don't even know it in your window? And all of a sudden, it's like a laser beam's coming in. I'm like, what? And I looked at my watch, and it was like 4:42. It's already sunrise.
So you were getting, what, 6 hours of sleep then on this trip?
Not that much. And it was hard. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time sleeping away from home. I just do.
Sometimes I do, yeah.
But I think that's a great trip. Anyone wants to do it, check it out. There's some great courses that are on the St. Andrews property, which are not St. Andrews, the old course. But it's one's called Jubilee, one's called the New Course. They have all these different courses, and they're all really good to play.
So they don't get like 8 hours of darkness then in the middle of the night.
Well, that's just for this time of the year, yes.
How do they sleep?
I don't know.
Everybody has blinds?
You must have those blind things, yeah. Whatever it is, you got to have them because it's too light.
When does the day end? Like, do they work 9 to 5 or do they work
a lot of them,
9 to 3?
Sure some do, but I think most of them are out. They're little pubs. They're pubs everywhere. They're great little pubs. They talk about their days. It's just a laid-back kind of thing. Very little crime, if at all, which is great. So you don't have to worry about that so much when you're out late. But we went to another course called Dumbarney.
Dumbarney.
They start with, everybody takes a shot of Dumbarney whiskey on the first hole to start your day. They bring it out to you on a big tray, and here you go. That was good, except I hooked my drive. I was seeing it was strong whiskey.
Very strong Dumbarney.
What did you think of Scottie Scheffler winning again?
It's pretty impressive, Bob, and he ran away with it.
And he's not going to be denied. The only person who can stop him is him, I think.
What was so impressive is that he won his fourth major in the exact amount of time that it took Tiger to win his fourth major compared to when they won their first.
However.
Unreal.
I mean, he's been, you know, he's got a long way to go to catch Tiger in some these things. But at the same time, he's doing stuff that we haven't seen since Tiger, right? So, I think, he's going to complete the career Grand Slam pretty quickly, I would think. Although, I thought that about Rory McIlroy, too. And it took him a long time to finally do it. But he did it eventually. It took a big weight off his shoulder. But that's a very competitive thing. You got to be like, look at DeChambeau. If he didn't shoot 78 in the first round, he would have won the thing.
Yeah, he was incredible.
Because he came back like really big after that, and just, you know, that's the bottom line.
That's the thing for DeChambeau. He always has like one day that just crushes him when he doesn't win the tournament. Like, obviously, he's had U.S. Opens and a lot of big events where he's been able to finish the job. But whenever he loses and you're like, man, Scotty or Bryson just missed out, it's because of days like that where they have a big blow-up number.
That's the thing. You can't have those. And if you do, it takes you out of contention. But this is interesting about Scheffler, some of the stuff he's done. When you talk about players to win multiple majors by 4 shots or more in the same season, there are only 3 guys who've ever done it. Ben Hogan did it in 1953, Tiger Woods in the year 2000 when he was at the height of his game, and then Scottie Scheffler in 2025. So when he wins big, and he does not lose when he leads after 3 rounds. Another thing that Tiger did. So now they got Ryder Cup. Are you a Ryder Cup fan?
Not really, no. I'll watch all the majors and I'll watch some PGA Tour events, but that's basically it.
Well, they're going to play this year at Bethpage Black in New York, and it's a really raucous crowd in New York. They'll come out and hope that the Americans can win. Americans don't have as much lately than compared to the Europeans. They're really, as a team, they seem to work better together. I don't know why that is, but that's how that seems to
work. Who are the Americans sending out there?
Well, Keegan Bradley's the captain. He's going to, I mean, you go by the point standings, who are the best, and they're obvious ones, obviously, with Scottie Scheffler leading the way. Keegan Bradley probably should call his own name and become a player coach, player whatever, because he's been that good. And here at Oakmont, he was in contention too. So that'll be interesting to see, because that's always and I want to give a shout-out to Nathan Smith. Do you know who he is?
I do not.
He's a great local golfer, one of the best amateur golfers in his time, and he is going to captain the Walker Cup team. And that's the best young American players versus overseas, and that'll be out at Cypress in the Pebble Beach area in September.
Ooh,
so it's a
fun.
Big honor for Nathan Smith, so congratulations to him.
Congrats, Nathan.
We've got to give those guys some props when you get a chance. 412-928-9370. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Jeff Hathorn will be here. We're going to get back to trade deadlines. If you have a take, call now. Try to get in on that, what the Pirates will do. I look at standings here, and I'm trying to figure out how many teams are actually in need of starting pitching. I counted, I don't know about you, I counted six teams that could use a bona fide starting pitcher at this time of the year, and they're all in contention to win something, whether it's a wild card berth or whether it's a division championship, and they have injuries to deal with. It's all going to be part of this whole thing. So Toronto right now is on a roll. They've won a lot of games in a row. They've taken over the lead in the American League East. The Yankees are in second, four back. The Yankees could need some starting pitching help. They've had some injuries there. The Red Sox have creeped back into this thing. Tampa Bay is now fading the other way, even though they're over 500. But Detroit, they don't have to worry about that. Cleveland, too far out. Kansas City, I don't think any of those teams are going to be. Houston's another team. Houston had two injuries, one of which is, I think, the guy's back. But they're in first place, and they're in quite a battle. Seattle's behind them, and then Texas is trying to get back into this thing. So those are the teams in the American League. And in the National League, the Phillies and Mets are tied up big. The Mets are probably the one team, given all their injuries. They've been mentioned with Mitch Keller. And I looked into their system. I don't know what they have, but I do like some players on their current roster, which to me is the conundrum. If you're trying to win, you want to bring in a pitcher like Mitch Keller, but you have to give up someone from the roster that has been helping you win so far this season. That's a tough thing to do, which is why I always think you get more in return if you wait till the end of the season, in the offseason.
That's still, I mean, I understand the reasoning for that, but at the same time, MLB Network just put up a graphic on one of their shows earlier today, MLB Central. Potential available starting pitchers at the deadline. They included Mitch Keller with Edward Cabrera of the Marlins, who's a young starter, 16 games at 3.61 ERA. Will they trade him? Who knows? Andrew Heaney's on this list. Charlie Morton, Eric Fetty of the Cardinals, who's having a decent year, and Herman Marquez of Colorado with a 5.67 ERA. What stands out above the rest on that list, Bob? Mitch Keller.
He's
clear and obvious, 3.38
earned run average. Quality starts every time he gets out there.
If they think that this is the list of the most likely available starting pitchers, Mitch Keller is the best.
Well, Andrew Heaney has gone backwards here. He's given up more home runs than anyone, I think, in the National League. And he got clobbered the other day. So he looked good at the beginning of the season. I don't know, out of gas now. Although he has postseason experience. There are teams that would like that. And we'll see what happens here. All right, what do we got? Callers on the line at 412-928-9370. I think Austin's actually taking one right now. So I'll wait until he gets done with that one. If anyone has a take on the trade deadline.
Let's get to Larry. He's in Mount Pleasant.
What's up, Larry?
Talk about the Pirates.
How are you? Oh, where did he go?
Oh, Larry hung up.
That was too rushed. I should have waited a little. Let it breathe a little bit. You just got off the phone with him, so maybe I rushed that whole situation. But tonight, the Pirates and the Tigers. Are you a believer in the Tigers as a legitimate World Series team?
I think they need more offense. Like, their pitching is very good with Skubal, and Casey Mize is good, and Jack Flaherty, I think, is better than his numbers have indicated. Their bullpen is solid. If they can find, like, another bat to lengthen their lineup, then I believe that the Tigers can make a run in the playoffs. Considering what they did at the end of the year last year, they just picked up where they left off. They're the best team in baseball. They were over 20 games over 500 coming into the series before losing last night.
All right, when you look at wild cards at this point, the Yankees, the Mariners, and the Red Sox are in those positions with Tampa Bay a game and a half back. See, I look at teams like that want to make one push. Boston can use some help. But again, I don't know how much they would be willing to give you at this point of the season, you know, because they need, and I'm not interested if I'm the Pirates, unless it's a big-time prospect. I am not interested in just taking another franchise's 10th or 13th ranked prospect. They have enough of those. They need people who are close to, if not in the majors already. And if that happens, it would help them moving forward to try to end this ridiculous streak of offensive ineptitude that we've seen throughout the course of the season. And again, the crime of it was that they knew this last offseason that they needed help with offense, and they didn't do anything about it. 412-928-9370, and we'll see if this offseason, and it should be way different for the Pirates and way different for Bob Nutting. But it all starts with what they do at this trade deadline, and if Ben Cherington makes some significant moves that could result in something that would help them. But his track record indicates that that's not something that you should expect. Although, he's at the last leg potentially of his tenure here in Pittsburgh. Who knows? I don't know what the future is for him. I still don't know what his contract length is. So Shelton's gone. He had time left on a contract. And so Cherington is next up, and a big decision will be on him. All right, who do we go to now? I saw we got a bunch of them.
All right, let's go to Greg in Youngstown. He's on the line.
Hello, Greg. What's up?
Just driving back from one of our dealerships. Hey, the thing about the trades, I mean, I don't want to trade Bednar. I don't want to trade Santana. I don't want to trade Cowler. I want to win next year. So we trade all of our good players. I mean, our pitching staff after Cowler and Skeens is not good. It's not. It's a hot mess. Everybody's overrating our pitching staff except for Skeens and Cowler and Bednar and our other closer. The rest of it's not good. So I don't know what people are thinking.
Well, what we're thinking is if Bob Nutting doesn't open up the wallet, they got to do something, because it all starts with him. All of this talk we have, it's nonsense to bring up all these different things without really hitting the biggest problem of all, and that's his lack of spending. To your point, Greg, if you keep all those guys, and I would understand that, because if you put those two at the top of your rotation, if Chandler should come up, and a lot of ifs, I get that part of it too, which makes you wonder about the actual depth that looks good on paper. But you can easily fix your offense in the offseason if you're willing to spend money.
I know. Did Bednar say he was going to sign a team-friendly deal? I mean, why don't you sign the guy? I mean, what do you got to lose? Trying to build a bullpen again is going to be a disaster. So now we're going to have to pick up relievers again and see if they work. I mean, you got to sign some players. They have to, put some money into this team. You just can't abandon ship and let these guys leave. Bob, for a fact, if we start losing players again, we're going to have to start bringing other players in. We have no clue if they're going to be good, especially if they're AA or AAA players. Again, and then Skeens is going to get upset, and then Skeens is going to want to get traded, I guarantee, next year. I mean, it's going to be a disaster.
Well, Skeens doesn't strike me as someone who would do that. He's just going to wait his time. He'll know when it's time, and they'll know when it's time. If they're going to meet his – that'll eventually take care of itself. But I'm operating under the assumption that you have him for at least 2 years, and in those 2 years, you should do everything in your human possibility to go out and get what you got to get to make this team better. So, Greg, you're right about that, and thank you. I'm not interested in AA prospects. I just am not. Who's next, Austin?
All right, let's go to Vinny in Springdale chime in.
What's up, Vinny? How are you?
Hey, Bob, how you doing today?
Good, what's up?
I'm just listening to that last caller. He's right and he's wrong, in my opinion. I think Bednar should go. I think we need to keep Santana. He solidifies a closure role. We can give up Bednar. But you're right, 100%. It's coming down to Nutting. I can talk to you about trades, but if he doesn't open up the wallet, it don't really matter.
Yeah, it's a simple solution, at least an easier solution than just trying to wait for guys to develop, because that could take longer than you have. And again, I'm trying to time it with Paul Skeens in the roster for the next 2 years at least. Vinny, thank you. Appreciate that at 412-928-9370. Next up.
All right, here is Jeff. He's in Jeanette.
Jeff is in Jeanette, and now he's on the Fan. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for taking my call. Thanks.
Good.
Listen, back when the Pirates were getting ready to draft, when Skeens was available, me and you had a discussion about hitting and pitching. And I made a point that pitching is more important. You made the point that hitting, right? Well, here we are. And your point's proven true.
Well, okay? I mean, obviously, they needed to shore it up several years ago, and they didn't do it in their drafting. None of the guys they've taken have panned out so far. And that's the problem, right? That's why hitting – I mean, you got to have both, obviously. If you get starting pitching that's good, Jeff, that gives you a huge advantage over a lot of teams who don't have that.
Right, so we can keep the score down. So if you score four runs, five runs, you should win the game with good pitching.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's been proven, I think, this year, hasn't it? Their record would be markedly different if they had any sort of, you know, they're dead last in runs scored in Major League Baseball. You're not going to win. I don't care how good your pitching is when you're dead last.
Absolutely. But do you abandon the pitching?
Well, I mean, there's ways to do it without doing that. Again, spending money in the offseason is one of them. Look, if you can't develop it, then you got to get it somewhere.
If we were in like $125 million, $130 million payroll, okay, like if we just increased it, $30 million, $40 million, we could have those players. They're available. They're available out there, hitters that can hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're just not doing it.
They're not doing it. Starts with the owner.
You have to offset both sides. Our pitching is unbelievable.
Well, it's been good all year, no question. Unbelievable is a statement that I don't know if I'd go that far after what I saw with the White Sox, but I get what you're taking. Jeff, I got to move on, but thank you, man.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Bob.